The Hebrew Order of David is one of our community's oldest and most established global outreach organizations. Join Stan Claff for the next hour as he explores the issues facing the men in the community. The HOD Hour is a fundraising initiative for the HOD. Welcome to the HOD Hour with Stan Claff. This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And I'm Stan Claff, and tonight we're talking to Boris Gremont, who is in Dallas, Texas, and we're going to be discussing the growth of the order and particularly the establishment of the Shimon Peres Lodge in Dallas, Texas. And welcome, Boris.
Hello, Stan. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And you?
I'm good, thank you.
And it's always good to speak to you. And what's the weather today in Dallas?
The weather is actually picture-perfect South African weather. We're probably at about 75 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. But we have come off the most terrible storm about 5 days ago. There's still about 80,000 people who are not yet had their electricity restored. And we have just had our internet service restored today, which is about 4 days after the storm.
Okay, so we're quite used to blackouts here and not having electricity, so we can empathize. And, of course, South African weather actually is heading into winter. It's actually becoming a little chillier in the evening. Nice days, but cool nights. And, right, so Boris, let me just do a little bit of introduction. So Boris Gremont is the past president of Shimon Peres. He is a founder member of the Lodge Shimon Peres. The starting president or the founding president was Dr. Martin Burke, and Boris Gremont was his vice president. He followed into the seat of president, and the lodge is growing. We were going to be talking to Jeff Romick, who's the current president, he's the current president, correct?
And current president, yes.
And but he wasn't available. So, Boris, you're going to have to fill us in. Give us a bit of background, how you came to the order and a little bit of background to the formation of Lodge Shimon Peres.
We are in our fifth year in HOD Dallas, Lodge Shimon Peres. We were introduced to the lodge through a delegation that came from Atlanta, including David Joss, Alan Rubenstein, and Leds Kreitzik, who asked us to form have a coffee and invite as many Jewish men as we could who we thought may be interested. And we had about 40 people attend, and of those 40, I would say about 15 maybe had signed up for being interested. And Martin Burke, I, and Gary Bonner signed up to at least start a lodge in Dallas. And we went to Atlanta, attended the first initiation that we'd ever seen in Atlanta, came back as members of HOD to Dallas. And then from then on, it was purely a case of building, where we currently have about 80 members, of which about 60, I would say, 50 to 60, are active in one way or another.
And the makeup of the lodge is not ex-South Africans. You have a lot of American, born and bred Americans in the lodge.
Well, this is a good news, bad news, I think. The initial group who signed up were probably 90% South Africans. And I think over time, South Africans had either been there, done that, seen that, and peeled off from being active, but were replaced. And I think the big impetus was replacing some of the management with American management. And I think that brought in non-South Africans into the lodge. And I think that was a big help getting legitimacy and not being perceived as a purely South African organization. And we needed that in order to get the community behind us. We cannot be a South African organization.
Yes. So actually, from a South African point of view, the opportunity for expansion into areas outside of South Africa, of course, the Hebrew Order of David originating here, but the growth possibility from the order's point of view is that we did have immigrants from South Africa who went around the world in the 80s and 90s, etc. And that's the window of opportunity. But the growth further going forward is dependent on your bringing in members of that, you know, citizens of those countries where we've expanded into, because otherwise you can't rely fully on immigration from here to be able to form. We can form the lodges, but we can't sustain them.
Right. Yeah, Stanwyck, you're cutting out, but let me just say there's a real dichotomy on how the lodge gets started and how the lodge builds. The South Africans don't have the experience of being in a fraternity. That they, even though they may have, most of them have gone to college, university, that they never had a fraternal bond like the American college graduates have. And the American college graduates really understand what a fraternal bond is. They understand how a fraternity works. They understand what a pledge means. And they do that in the American universities. They make pledges to their fraternity. The South Africans don't do that, but yet I think it's almost imperative that South Africans start a lodge because they understand the commitment to Chesed and the commitment to raising money and commitment to helping the underprivileged. South Africans understand that better than I think the local community here, because the local community are involved on a day-to-day basis with that. And starting a new organization is not something that the local people, the local community, are interested in doing. So I think starting the lodge is important that South Africans launch it, but I think having open arms and embracing the local community is what is next and what has to follow. And I think we're following the same path that lodges in Atlanta and lodges in Florida and probably Canada have seen, that you start off with the South Africans and ultimately you are not a South African organization. You are far more blended into the local community than pure South Africans.
So my experience...
But it's interesting how that works.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. My experience has been, and you're living proof of that, is that you're a Randfontein born and bred ex-South African. And I found that South Africans who lived out of the main cities like Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, etc., tend to make the best lodge members because you understand the Chavashaft angle of what it is to be part of communities. Whereas if growing up in the city, it's a little bit, less personal and less connected. We kind of so busy concentrating on business that we really forget about the niceties of life.
I think that's very true. When I look back, and I've told people this before, when I grew up in Randfontein, I always knew about some organization called HOD, and I'd ask people, what is HOD all about? And they would never, ever tell me. I never, ever got to know what HOD was about. And in fact, that was the case until HOD came to Dallas. And for the first time, I figured out this is what HOD in Randfontein was all about. So it was far more, I think, secretive, in Randfontein than we are today. We have a lot more visibility here, in the United States, but the actual community was very tightly knit. And I think that was part of the growing up in small towns. And I'm sure over all of South Africa, when I look at the lodges that existed in all the small towns between Germiston and Potchefstroom and a number of the small towns, I'm sure that was the case. It was very tightly knit, and that carried over into my thinking of becoming part of HOD here in Dallas.
No, and that's actually positive to me. It's palpable when I have come across those people who've come from smaller towns and cities. They have a definite sense of community. Coming back to the lodge, since you were started, and I was privileged to be the grand president at the time and attended the consecration of the lodge. Give us a sense of what's taken place, what kind of projects you're working on, where you've been from there.
Well, I will tell you that the initial thoughts of our lodge were, we're going to launch our lodge and immediately start doing some charitable work and start raising money. And we found that very, very difficult to do at the outset. And what came to us was the fact that we need to build a strong fraternal organization first. We need to have people in teams, people who understand one another, people who even know one another, before we can start going out as an organization and raising money. So we backtracked a little bit and internalized our organization to build a tightly knit organization, a close knit organization first, and then start a community of members to go out and start raising money. And that's our experience has been that build your organization first, get your core organization well organized and well run before you start going out into the community to try and raise money or even do some charitable work. But when we look back on the work we have done, we have done a tremendous amount of, I think, good work, not just for the Jewish community, but the community at large. We did do a very, very large event that we raised money, about $12,000 or $14,000, and sent that down to our brethren in Houston, HOD brethren in Houston that had suffered terribly in a flood. But we also raised money and sent money to the Dallas police, who had a terrible tragedy where four policemen were shot. And there was a sniper in the downtown area, and we sent money to support the families of the Dallas fallen officers. But we've also done a lot of work for the Jewish Family Service that do feeding of the poor and helping the underprivileged. And we go in once or twice a year and repack all their shelves so that they continue dispensing food and food products from their warehouse and have their warehouse reorganized with work that we do. We also do some work for a Chai, which is a series of homes where handicapped and disadvantaged people live, and they needed their homes cleaned out. We cleaned out the garage, we cleaned out some of the furniture, and then sold the furniture where we could. But those are things that we do on a regular basis. We also do a Christmas Eve, Christmas Day. In fact, we go out and deliver food to the poor and the underprivileged. And we've done this every year since we've been a lodge. And that has been extremely rewarding. And we encourage our members to bring spouses and adult or teenage children along to see what it's like to do this kind of work. We have been very, very successful at doing that. We are now looking at a possibility of having an extremely large event with a keynote speaker, and we're looking at a very, very high-profile keynote speaker. Probably within the next 12 months we'd like to do it and raise a significant amount of money and earmark it for a number of different deserving causes, some of which may be in the United States, maybe in Dallas, and one or two of which may be in Israel. So we are building now from a strong base, a strong core, where we can start looking at bigger projects.
So we're talking to Boris Grimont. He's the past president of Shimon Peres Lodge in Dallas, Texas. and we're discussing the early days of really writing history of the growth of the Hebrew Order of David internationally, and Dallas and Houston being growth lodges. And in fact, at the last conference, the Dallas Lodge was awarded the best newsletter of all the lodges around the world, because they bring out with I wouldn't say monotonous, but with joyous regularity, a newsletter every Thursday, which gives you information about the Hebrew Order of David that's in Dallas, the activities, birthdays, you know, days of red letter days that really affect the community, and of which the rest of the order looks forward to reading. So, Boris, just I want to take you back a little bit, because when I met you, you gave me a certificate, or you showed me a certificate which had belonged to your father-in-law, and who was a member of the Hebrew Order of David, initiated in 1936. That's a well-known South African lawyer, Jaime Wiener. And so I'm surprised to hear that you didn't know about the Hebrew Order of the David. Did he not tell you anything?
Stan, it's an interesting story. He never ever mentioned Hebrew Order of David, but I have to tell you, Stan, that it seemed to be, and I hate using this word, but it seemed to be a secretive organization at that time. And maybe we were induced at that time not to tell anybody who we are and what we are, and be more of a secretive organization. And we never knew it until in Dallas, and going into Dallas probably, I've been in Dallas 40 years, going into Dallas 35 years living here, my wife Joan was going through old paperwork from her late father and came across the certificate, which we never even knew he had and we had actually possession of. So I think it was probably a best kept secret. The fact that he was in the lodge was a shock to me to even find out that he was in the lodge. And probably the even more best kept secret was the fact that we had the certificate, which I think is a magnificent piece of art. And I'm absolutely gratified to see that a number of lodges are using it, and it is being distributed all over the world as part of the essence of HOD, which I think is amazing.
So we have just refurnished one of our boardrooms at the HOD Center in Johannesburg, and we have a number of those illuminated certificates which we've mounted on the wall and display with names of people who have returned those certificates. I mean, you're welcome to keep yours. If you ever want to return it, there's a home for it in our museum. But we've put them up, and there's some very well-known names. And if you talk about security, it's actually quite ironic, because Jaime Wiener, late Jaime Wiener, was the attorney for my family, who I worked for a number of years. And I was a member of the Hebrew Order of David, and he was a member of the Hebrew Order of David. I don't think either of us knew that. So the secret was well kept.
I think that story you just told has been repeated often, more often than not, when people tell me, Jaime Wiener, he did my ANC, my internuptial contract, or he did the conveyancing of the first house, the last house that I bought. He was very, very well known in South Africa, extremely well known as an attorney. But also, I and my wife Joan had no idea that he was part of the organization. So it's interesting to hear you talk about that too. And I know he was very, very instrumental in, for example, the Transvaal Automobile Club. I think he drafted the first paperwork forming the club, and certainly during the time that they expanded and moved from Kilani into their current premises. So there are a lot of people who knew him, but I don't think anybody knew, other than the immediate HOD members, that he was an HOD member. So that's been interesting. But Stan, I'm going to be coming to South Africa probably in October, And I would love to come and see HOD. I've never actually seen the facility. And I'm going to ask my wife very kindly if she will donate part of that as part of the heritage of HOD to the organization.
I do
want to correct one thing, Stan.
Sure, sorry.
I think if my memory is right, and I'm getting a bit old, so I may be wrong here, but I think we won the best a lodge award, but did not win the best every Thursday communication award. I think we were in the running for that, but didn't win that. But nonetheless, we were gratified that we did get an award after, you know, running as hard as we did and building and kind of getting the lodge to where it is. I do also want to say one thing about building lodges. I think our lodge and probably Houston are templates of what HOD can do to build lodges in other cities. I think you're almost at the point, I would think, that you can put up a template that says this is how you take a city and start forming a lodge and building a lodge and guiding them along about how to do it. And I think you folks have enough experience, or certainly Atlanta does now, to be able to do that and expand into other cities too.
Okay, Boris, we're going to hold that thought. We're going to go to some ad break, and we'll be back in a few moments. Please stay on the line.
This is the HOD Hour with Stan Claff.
And I'm Stan Claff, and I have on the line with me from Dallas, Texas, Boris Cremont, who's the past president of the lodge, which is in Dallas, which is Lodge Shimon Peres. I just want to break for a moment to pay tribute to somebody who passed away this week. And we have the Jewish Genealogical Society of South Africa, which we give a home to in Johannesburg in the HOD Center. And we have our meetings there, and they have a monthly meeting for the public. And the past president of that organization, Mo Skickney, passed away this week, and sadly wasn't well for quite a while. And we just want to wish condolences to the family and pay our respects to a man who really had the genealogical society and genealogy at his heart. So, Boris, we're back with you. I want to really get into a little bit more into the hierarchy of the lodge. And I have to say that of all the lodges that I've been in within and been associated with, you made a point earlier about how you structured the lodge and how you started off by getting the lodge structure correct. And I have to say that I've also thank you, Dr. Martin Burke, Jeff Romick, Gary Bonner, the founders of the lodge, who really showed us the way of management. And the lodge could really not be in more capable hands. And it's really something from which all the lodges can learn, is that we have capable people in the order throughout. And I think also at the moment, the lodge is being controlled and managed through the governing lodge in Atlanta. And I think that you, Boris, Martin, and so on, should really take a bit of a role at a higher level and in the governing lodge level to try and spread that and spread your experience and your expertise throughout the order, and we can all learn.
Stan, I'm sure all of us, certainly at the initial stages of the lodge, you have this experience, would be very, very happy and very willing to do that. And I have shared some of this with worthy brother David Joss. In fact, I think I've written a template for him as to what we saw as the things that could be done or should be done in forming a lodge, and a lot of it, of course, has to do with the communication that you bring to a lodge when it's being formed, as to what the expectations are and how to get the lodge organized, and also what to do first, second, and third, which in our case, we stumbled a little bit in getting to that, and I think those mistakes don't have to be repeated every time. And certainly Lodge International South Africa and the experience you've had in not just running the lodges but starting a lodge is also invaluable, even though I'm sure the United States is different, and it is different because the makeup, the demographics that we have here are not, certainly not even close to the demographics you have in South Africa, with regard to religious issues, with regard to political issues, and just with regard to the competition in this city, as in most cities, for attracting younger Jewish men to become involved, where they have so much competition from other organizations, their synagogues and shuls and other charitable organizations, and then, of course, community organizations that are also in the same business of helping others. And we have to make a decision where you want to invest your time and who you want to spend your time with. And I think it's become imperative for us, and I'm just going to digress for a second here, that we are now building a database of all of our members' interests, all of our members' professional affiliations and professional experience and professional qualifications, so that members will have the ability to look up somebody who is, let's say, a tennis player and just put in tennis and see who members are who play tennis or golf or any other sport or hobby for that matter. So we see this as a way to bring about more cohesion amongst our members and bring in members who have the same interests that we have. And that's all part of the learning experience that we've been through, that we see this is now essential for us to keep our members tightly knit.
So in South Africa, going back prior to 1955, when the Medical Schemes Act came in, and I'm sure that Jaime Wiener must have been part of that process, but not that process, the part of the actual structure which existed in the Hebrew Order of David, where if you're a member of the order and you wanted, let's say, legal help, or you wanted medical help, or you needed assistance with finding jobs, etc., they could turn to the order and they would have people on panels that would really assist you through the lodge, and maybe if services had to be paid for, the lodge would pay for it, or sometimes these the lawyers, doctors, etc., would give their services free to members of the order to be able to, and that was how we helped each other get a leg up, actually, going back right from the very start in 1904, but it existed all the way through until 1955, when the Medical Schemes Act came in South Africa, and it wasn't possible to do those, to have those kind of services in an official capacity. We still do some of that, but of course things did change. And in fact, this last week, I've had two lots of communication. And by the way, we have a massive database here of something between 15,000 and 20,000 names of members who've been, of people who have been members of the Hebrew Order of David through all the years, with some of their history. And that's a building, a database which is being built sort of every day. And this particular person passed away in 1945. And he was part of a panel of doctors who was called upon, and part of the lodge structure here. They sent me that, I'm still to go through it, but they've sent me some information about him and about the workings of the lodge at that time, on the East Rand, where he practiced, and unfortunately he died prematurely. Untimely death, he was very ill, but that's the sort of thing that was being done, and I have a suspicion that Tommy Wiener was probably on a panel which assisted members of the order in that way.
I have no doubt about that. And it's a great point you're making, Stan. We have just started, maybe about a month ago, a networking group, and we just had our first meeting that I attended on Tuesday. And the networking group started off helping people who are in transition for jobs or who are having difficulty with some element of their lives. But we do have a group of dentists, doctors, and some specialty physicians, as well as lawyers, who will do work and assist others in need on a pro bono basis. So that is in place, but we don't have that as a formal offering that we offer to HOD. But everybody knows and understands that through confidential communication, they can get the assistance of some of the brothers for some of those services. So I think that's a tradition. Sounds like that has been in place since prior to 1955, certainly. But I think that's part of the essence and part of the DNA of HOD. And I think those sorts of things are things that we have to maintain, and we do, certainly in this lodge. I don't know about the other lodges, but in Dallas, those are things that are available to our members. And I am 100% sure Jaime Wiener, the late Jaime Wiener, did that for anybody in HOD that needed it. There's no doubt about it.
I do agree with that. I'm going to go away from the HOD for a moment and talk about you personally, because I've seen what you've done with trains. I know you're a big fan of model trains. I donated some of your work and some of your, I dare not call them toys, to the hospitals, and you've been involved in it, and I've seen some of the work that you've done. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well,
I know that's your passion.
Train interest starts. Yeah, it is a passion, but I think sometimes a passion can also be a disadvantage, because I've been focused on it all my life. I started when I was 4 years old. My father had discovered a brother living in Sao Paulo, Brazil, who he had thought had died in the Holocaust. He made contact with this brother in Sao Paulo, and he started sending my father's children, which was me and my brothers, parts of trains. And I have built that up to a huge, huge, huge collection. And at this point, everything is now computerized. It all has microchips embedded into every single device. And I'm looking to build it up and ultimately donate it to some charitable organization. I'd like to do it to a hospital, or at least somewhere where they can use it for the benefit of children to come and look at it. I've also been in discussions with a museum to build it into a museum here in Dallas, but as an educational tool rather than just a something that's visual that children will walk around and look at and say it looks pretty. So it would be educational from the point of view of building in aspects of it, like environmental protection, environmental violators, possibly showing different transportation systems around the world, also doing transportation with using bullet trains, which I have, as well as slow-moving trains, to show where we've come on a level of transportation in railways. So that's been an absolute passion of mine all my life. But I do want to admit and confess, in my last visit to South Africa in September last year, I was privileged to be invited to Rovos Rail, to the headquarters of Rovos Rail, by the CEO. And I spent a day with him moving big trains around in his rail yard in Pretoria, which was probably the highlight of my train collection days. And this is a guy who owns 22 full-size trains and runs them all across South Africa and up into Zimbabwe and further north. So my passion for trains has given me an opportunity to spend a day at Rovos's headquarters, which was fantastic. And that's just part of one of my passions. The second passion is music. I have about 30,000 songs on my hard drive. They're all 60s music. I do confess I have some old South African songs on the hard drive as well. But people who are interested or love music, I make CDs for them so that they can play them in their car or play them at home. So that's all part of what I do beyond my 9-to-5 workday.
So my wife was most impressed with your music when you were kind enough to take us around and played your in your car and at home you had music playing. She was most impressed. So I think when you come here, you need to give her a tape or a CD or a disc or whatever you however you distribute it.
Stan, I'll contact you before I come and just let me know what kind of music she wants. I also want to let you know it's time for you to visit Dallas again. If you thought Dallas was impressive then, I want to take you on another tour and let's go do a tour and go have some lunch or something and sit outside and talk about what we're doing in HOD and what's going on here in Dallas and also what's going on in South Africa.
So our plan, I'm hoping that it will be possible to attend because you have installations taking place in September in Atlanta, and I'm hoping to travel there. And I don't know if you're going to, your lodge's installations coincide with that period. But if possible, yes, I'm definitely going to be. It's something that I need to do.
Stan, it does coincide. I think the difference for us this year compared to all previous years is we used to have it on a Sunday. We used to have a Sunday brunch. We used to have the lodge meeting, the installation, and then have a big lunch. And then everybody used to head out on planes in the afternoon. I think this time, this year, it has been coordinated closely with Atlanta. So we're going to have it, I think, during the week. And I think you folks will come through Dallas and maybe on to Houston or the other way around. But we'll all have it during the week where you can get everybody within a week. So please, if you can, come in a day earlier or spend a day afterwards so we can spend some time together.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you a little bit of an idea of what we're doing here and in South Africa. So we have started a project called A Day in the Life of a Jew in South Africa. And because cell phones and, you know, phones today are so easy to use and cameras are so accessible, all you need to do is to take a photograph of anything Jewish, function, activity, whatever it is, send it in to us at admin@hrdavid.org. We hope at the end of the year or as soon as possible thereafter to publish a book on this, a coffee table book on with the photographs. We're also offering 25,000 Rand in prizes, which we want to put across the board. And so anybody who wants to enter into that project, it's something which we would like to do. I know that some of these projects have been done before, but this is a fundraiser in one sense, but sending in the photograph, we don't want 1,000 words. I know a picture does take 1,000 words. We just want a photograph and a few words of description, and we'll do the rest. Today, cameras on these phones are so high-tech and so good that you can take as good a picture as with any camera, and we're looking forward to that as a project.
Do you have to live in South Africa to participate, or can it just be somebody who was in South Africa for a vacation and took a photograph with a story to tell?
No, it's absolutely open to anyone and any age group. From if you can hold a camera, you're here in South Africa. It's a day in the life of a Jew in South Africa, so it can be anything, any activity, ranging from functions like bar mitzvahs, weddings, etc., right down to shuls and activities that take place there. And so we'd really like to see. We've already started getting a few photographs, but the actual notice is going out in the next few days. So that's a project which we want to push. You mentioned helping people who need food. So we have a project called Bringing Yont of Joy, which we mount once a year, and it's just started. We ask the public to donate and assist us. and we add in from our side, and we distribute to all the areas where there are underprivileged people and families, starting with going through, believe it or not, still the Heilbrow, the, and you mentioned Yeovil, all of those areas, and as far down to the Eastern Cape where we assist some of the lodges there with cash or funding to be able to distribute food parcels in those areas. So it's a project which we ask for donations, 180 rand upwards. We send it out. It is going out to the community, and we already have started getting money in on those projects.
Stan, a thought has occurred to me, and I want to suggest it, even though we're on the radio, I want to suggest it to you and maybe explore it with you sometime offline. Every lodge has unique experiences, and every lodge has unique projects that they do, but there's no cross-fertilization of those activities that filter into other other lodges.
Correct.
And I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking these could be great projects for us too, maybe with some variations, but still the principle is intact. And I think it would be incredible if some of the things we do are then put into some communication device. And other lodges do the same, and everybody looks at the interesting things lodges are doing and can pick and choose those things that may be appropriate, or even if they need to be tweaked, can be used by those lodges. And what I'm listening to you in South Africa are certainly things that we could apply here and do very well with, I think.
So,
and I think we lack the communication right now to be able to filter that across all the lodges.
So your dreams are about to come true, because we're really at the point of launching an international website, which we've been working on for some substantial time. And that will have, it's got timelines, it's got the history of all the lodges, every single lodge that's ever been in existence. But each lodge will have a section, and in that section will be, your ability to post newsletters, to post information about events that are taking place, descriptions of projects, etc., and it'll be accessible to the public in the first phase, which is being launched. We're just tweaking a few technical issues, and then we're going to launch, and so that'll be available, and that should cover most of the kind of communication problem that you're talking about. Of course, we're alert to this type of issue, and how do we, you know, international organization with a big footprint, you know, stretching right throughout America to the United Kingdom, to Israel, where we have lodges, and to South Africa. And this is really, I hope will bring about, a much better communication system, and will alert people to the kind of projects that others, because there's just no end to the ingenuity of members of the order and the type of projects that can be done. And you're absolutely making the right point.
Stan, there is absolutely today no excuse for that not to happen. I'm absolutely thrilled that you're doing that. And to me, that's always been an issue when we're trying to look at the kinds of things we want to do. And we've just developed a 5-year strategic plan for Dallas, which we spent a couple of months working on. And those sorts of things that other lodges are doing are clearly things that we shouldn't have to reinvent, and we shouldn't have to be figuring out how to do it and make mistakes doing it. It should certainly be available, and I think what that website will do for us could be pretty amazing. And I'm going to make sure in our lodge encourage people to keep it up to date. As we do projects, make sure that the website gets updated with the kinds of things we're doing, and almost with a report card that says, this is what we do right, this is what we didn't do right, you know, learn from our mistakes. And I think having the communications that we have today, it's absolutely inexcusable not to be able to do this.
So in the remaining few minutes, I just want to repeat what I said earlier. This, I'm speaking to Boris Grimont, past president and a founder member of the Lodge Shimon Peres in Dallas, Texas. But further than that, aside from your trains, your music, do you want to give us a little bit of what you do to make some money, or how you work, what you do? Is that something that you want to share with us?
Well, yeah, I can certainly share that. I'm in the private equity space, and part of the business I'm in is I do raising funds for companies that are looking for growth. I do raising funds for projects where people have some technology or some product that they want to launch. But I also do quite extensively some commodity trading on a brokerage basis, where we're focused on fuel trading throughout the world. In fact, this morning I happened to talk to a South African. I asked him where he was from. He says, "I'm sitting in my home in Parkhurst."
Right.
And as a shock, I said to him, "Where about in Parkhurst?" He said, "Well, Parkhurst is in Johannesburg." And I said, "Yes, I know that. But what street are you on?" And I knew exactly where he was. So I do deal on a worldwide basis. Our company deals on a worldwide basis. I represent a refinery, a Russian refinery, a very large Russian refinery, selling fuel. And it's crude oil as well as refined fuel like jet fuel and diesel to buyers worldwide. And That is done on a brokerage basis, so I don't really see the fuel. I don't take a position by owning the fuel, but I bring buyers to the Russian refinery, and they do the transaction. That's primarily what I'm doing for most of the time, other than the time that I do some fundraisers for companies that are looking for growth, or somebody who wants to sell his business and looking for a buyer. So on that in that business, I deal in the United States. On my commodities brokerage business, I deal worldwide. Interestingly enough, I think Mozambique went through a period a few months ago where they had extensive flooding.
Right.
We had a number of Mozambican buyers.
In a very recent past.
Very recent, yes. And we were asked to assist in providing some fuel. It was essentially diesel fuel to Mozambique. We could not get that transaction done. I think there was a little bit of corruption in trying to get that project done, and we just don't touch that. But we touch Africa very often. I don't really deal in the Nigerian fuel production, but certainly South Africa and Mozambique were people we were dealing with in those countries that needed fuel, and we do deal with them on a fairly regular basis. So that's what I do when I'm not playing with my trains or doing my music.
So just on a lighter note, I mean, I really think that if it wasn't for corruption, I don't know if South Africa would have an economy. But in all seriousness, it's been a wonderful pleasure to have you on the show, to discuss with you and the growth of and kola kavod to you and your team. Starting with Martin, yourself, Gary Bonner, Jeff Romick, and all of your brethren in Dallas. I hope to see you soon. I think it'll be great. But from a organizational point of view, hats off to you. You've done a great job in getting the order established and as part of the growth in America. And I've had promises from the governing lodge, Alan Rubenstein, Les Kreitzik, David Joss, Mario Overs, who are really telling me that they're going to be opening a lodge a year, and so you're a new lodge every year, and I'm sure your template is going to be coming useful. So thank you again.
That's great. Thank you. And likewise to you, Stan. It has been an absolute pleasure and a terrific experience getting onto the HOD bandwagon and riding with them for the last 4.5 years, and look forward to seeing you in September when you're here. Please spend some time with us.
And so we're going to be crossing to other lodges throughout. We've drawn up a roster of lodges, and we're going to be talking to all the lodges and the presidents past and past and present presidents of these lodges to be able to get a feeling and get our message out. You talked about a secret organization. Unfortunately, I don't think that as an organization we can exist with the secrets. I mean, the Harry Potter stuff is all right, you know, behind closed doors, but we have to be seen to be doing what we're doing, and a perception is everything. And so whatever we do with intent, we do with, we try to, in our constitution it says we're going to help alleviate suffering wherever it may be, and you're doing a great job in Dallas. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Stan, and thank you for the opportunity to tell our story.
Thank you, and wish everybody good Shabbos and great weekend. In South Africa, we have a holiday on Monday, which is the Youth Day, and so, yes, it's a fantastic time of year for us, and we're heading into winter, but you're heading into summer, and so thank you again, and good night.
Thank you. Good night.